Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. One era is coming to an end and another one is coming into being. As the West and its global institutions decline, BRICS is positioned to fill the void. The West is forever in search of enemies, while BRICS promotes trade and development. Essentially, a win-win approach. Crosstalking BRICS, I'm joined by my guest, Wang Guan in Beijing. He is a journalist and TV host at CGTN under the China Media Group. Also in Beijing, we have Einar Tanjer. He is a senior fellow at the Taihei Institute, as well as chairman of Asia Narratives. And in New Delhi, we cross to Palki Sharma. She is managing editor of First Post and Network 18. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I would just appreciate it. With due respect to the gentlemen on the panel, I am a very conservative man, so I will go to ladies first. We will go to New Delhi. Palki, I think it's very interesting is that in 2001 at Goldman Sachs, an investment firm, they came up with the acronym BRICS, and it was basically a vehicle to invest or plunder, whatever word you want, into the developing world. And now we have the 16th summit of BRICS in Kazan. It's quite amazing. An idea that was born in the West has been taken over and developed by the global South. I think that's a very interesting chronology. Go ahead.
It is indeed. And the person who coined the term apparently has said that I don't see the point of this group anymore, apart from the fact that the US is not a it. So the West is watching what the BRICS is doing, and the BRICS has heft. The number of members has grown, as you know, and this is data that we've all seen being talked about and discussed. BRICS Plus now consists of 10 emerging economies representing more than 45% of the global population and nearly 27% of the world's GDP. So the potential is immense. Having said that, the BRICS needs to do a lot of work. There's talk of de-dollarization. There's talk of getting more members in. There's talk of building an alternative order. So a very ambitious agenda that the BRICS countries have set for themselves. We hope that they only get more powerful, more effective, and they are able to solve the problems that the West and the Western-led order has not been able to solve.
Wang Guan in Beijing. I mean, a lot of whatever, but little coverage it gets in the West. This is a counter block, a Russia, China block, India block against the West. That is a mischaracterization of BRICS. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. It doesn't look for a confrontation like the West does. The West is hyper-aggressive right now. And BRICS is a breath of fresh air saying, no, trade and development and alternative institutions that are not controlled by the West is the way forward. I think that's a very simple message. That's why I think BRICS will eventually work. Go ahead in Beijing.
Yes, I mean, BRICS is not Western, but BRICS is not anti-Western.
Exactly.
I mean, it's too much attention is focusing, or rather speculating, on what BRICS might be against. It's time that people talked about what BRICS is actually for. It is for development, it is for peace, and it's for making people-to-people bonding and connections. I mean, if you look at New Development Bank, for example, formerly known as the BRICS Bank, over the span of past 10 years, it has granted some $35 billion worth of loans to the Global South, financing some 105 projects. So we're talking about roads, bridges, airports, and railways, and also agriculture. You know, I was visiting Brazil last year, and for example, we were pleasantly surprised by the Chinese Longping seed technology, known as Longping technology, that is helping Brazilian corn to double and triple their yields within a given piece of land. That Chinese technology is accounting for over 60% of Brazilian corn market share. Stuff like that. It's about development. It is about making people's lives better. So I think there has been a whole lot of speculation and mischaracterization for whatever little coverage that is granted to the BRICS. Like you said, I can't agree more, Peter. The West needs an enemy. The Western military-industrial complex needs an enemy. I lived in the Pentagon area for some 8 years as a Washington correspondent, and there has been a whole lot of corruption within the military-industrial complex against the wishes and warnings of Dwight Eisenhower, the late U.S. leader. The complex has ever been expanding. So is the Europeans. They have been expanding their NATO under the guidance of the U.S. And look what happened now.
That's what happened now. I know. You know, one of the interesting things is that the West likes to peddle a rules-based order, but the rules-based order only benefits the few at the expense of the many. And it seems to me that the BRICS proposition is just the reverse. Go ahead.
Well, you know very well that the United States is an empire. We've only been at peace for 231 out of 248 years. We solve our problems by taking things from other people. Any challenge is viewed as a threat and will be met with unwarranted response. It is just part of our nature because this is where we are in history. The question is, will we ever transition to a civilization where we start thinking about managing the things that we have, like our poverty, the fact that we have so many 10.1% poverty, 30% of our people can't rebuild above the third grade level. There are so many things wrong with the United States, but we don't pay attention to them. We try to look outside for enemies to blame for whatever is going wrong within our country.
You know, Palicki, one of the you already mentioned in your first answer is about institutions. And, you know, again, when I talk about BRICS with people in the West, again, they're saying, is this a military bloc? Is this confrontational? And I've always tried to explain that imagine a world beyond the West, not against the West, but beyond it. You know, financial institutions, de-dollarization. And, you know, I'm always I'm countered by, well, the dollar is a safe currency. And I said, well, if you're a foreign country and you have dollars or a company, you can face sanctions. And I think this is what's given the BRICS the impetus because, I mean, if they steal Venezuelan gold, they steal Russian assets, they can steal your assets too. I mean, if this isn't a call for greater unity in BRICS, I can't think of a better one. Go ahead, in New Delhi.
Right. In fact, I think that's something that Russian President Putin also raised, the pitch to de-dollarize, to challenge the hegemony of the Western banking system. And we've seen what happened with SWIFT, which was supposed to be a nonpartisan group, but it was weaponized against Russian banks. So that really is a challenge. But we must also be mindful of the fact that the U.S. dollar still accounts for almost 60% of forex reserves the world over. And while we talk about de-dollarization, and this term has been used and discussed at length for years now, the progress has been limited because there are very many challenges, even within the BRICS. I think the biggest challenge for the BRICS as a group is to ensure that all the members are on the same page, yep, that we are able to forge consensus on basic issues. The Indian Prime Minister talked about bringing in the UPI as an alternative, and that is something that can be used. But then again, a lot of questions still need to be answered. So while I think we are moving in the right direction, there are a lot of fronts that still need to be figured out on what we are going to do, how much technology are we going to share, and what sort of trust, most importantly, BRICS members can ensure amongst each other to be able to create a platform that all of us will benefit from.
Yeah, Guangwang, in Beijing, I think one of the biggest problems for me when I think about BRICS developing is that most countries in the world, because of the information infrastructure, they learn about other countries. BRIC countries learn about other BRICS countries through Western media. I'm thinking of like Reuters and things like that. This is a kind of information infrastructure that I think is really, really pressing right now, because I don't want to learn about India through American media.
I mean, you're exactly right. To be honest with you, I was a big fan of our Indian friend's projects in India. I went on YouTube and watches her show often, and so it is with yours, the crosstalk. But I think we need, yes, common mediums of understanding. By that, I mean the languages, because within BRICS, intra-BRICS, we have a diverse range of countries, civilizations and cultures represented. That is great, but on the other hand, that creates a problem. That is, we need a unified voice, a unified medium of understanding. Because relying on the Western sources of information, look at what can happen. I mean, misinformation, disinformation, simplistic narratives. Noam Chomsky pointed this out better than arguably anyone else could have done 40 years ago in his famous book, Manufacturing Consent, saying that there are the many mechanisms of censorship within the United States, although the U.S. will never own up to it. The U.S. will never love the word censorship. I mean, you've got to have donors, you've got to have financiers from big corporations, you've got to have good relations with the White House spokesperson that you get to sit in the front row instead of you know, being kicked out like Jim Acosta of CNN once was by Donald Trump, so on and so forth. So yes, we need better mechanisms. You know, what's encouraging is there, if you're in Beijing right now like I do, you will be encouraged to see how many Russians and Indians or South Africans studying the Chinese language and vice versa. A lot of Chinese are studying in Johannesburg, in St. Petersburg, despite Western sanctions against Russia. So people-to-people bonding is very important. We've got to learn each other more through the filters. Through the filters. Filters are bad. Filters are misleading. And filters are counterproductive.
I know. Basically the same question, too, because I think the key word here is understanding. I mean, the BRICS countries know the threats of the West. Again, you know, the collective West is at war in one form or another with Russia. If it's better to stand together than to stand alone. And I think that's a message of the last 2 years.
Well, I think the correct phrase is it's better to, if you don't hang together, you'll hang separately.
Right.
I mean, there is the things. I'm a senior fellow at the Taiher Institute. We hold a civilization forum, and we've done this for the last 10 years. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is the kind of communication that is necessary. Confucius said, we are blessed with two ears and one mouth, so we should listen twice as much as we say. And that applies to China as well as other countries. China has a primary trade relationship with 140 countries. Unfortunately, the Chinese know very little about the countries there. There, it's improving.
I have to jump in here. We're going to have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on BRICS. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBeltrum, and we're discussing BRICS. Okay, I want to go back to Einar in Beijing. I mean, one of the interesting phenomena in thinking about BRICS, and I was a trained historian, and so, you know, history is important, but it always is important where your starting point is. BRICS is challenging in a constructive way, I would say, that the post-World War II order that was created in 1945. But if you, I would prefer to take a much broader look. I think we're seeing 500 years of Western domination of the globe being coming to an end, and mostly by its own demise, its own unforced errors. But that's a huge shift. It's a paradigm shift, and we're all lucky, I think, to be witnesses to see that happening. As I said in my introduction, one world is coming to an end, and another one is coming into being. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's been 600 years of basically colonial efforts, basically pushed forward by the ability to use cannons and weapons that were superior. The world was conquered by the Europeans, and then after them, the Americans. So we're seeing the decline of that, and that whole model was based on, if I have the power, I make the rules. I don't have to obey them, but you certainly do. And that is being changed, this multipolar world, where a lot of the countries who used to have the majority of the GDP, for instance, you know, India had 24% of the world's GDP in the area that encompasses India today. When the British left, they had 4%. So it gives you the kind of idea of the ravages of things. I mean, you know, people in the West think that Africa is a bunch of savages. Yep. Actually, they had civilizations dating back thousands of years before anybody in Europe was even thinking beyond the rolling of stone around. So, I mean, there's so many, as you were pointing out earlier, asking the question, There's a dearth of real information. There's disinformation out there that has basically made anybody who is not white and part of Europe somehow a lesser being. And we're seeing that very clearly in Gaza. For some reason, when somebody is killed in Ukraine and they're white, it's a huge tragedy. It's a moral issue. But when thousands of children and women are being slaughtered there because they're not the right color, it just doesn't matter. So, yes, it's a positive change. We need to start thinking about civilizational values, how we manage amongst ourselves, how we understand that there are differences, but we can live with them. Kind of a Westphalian idea. So hopefully that will take its course sooner rather than later.
Well, Paul Keith, I think is I'm fascinated with what Einar had to say because, you know, when we, in the West, they have talked for decades about the rise of China. But, you know, looking at many of the countries in BRICS, it is the re-emergence of these countries, the re-emergence of their cultures and civilization on a global scale. You know, India and Africa are perfect examples, you know, or the Western mindset of there's a certain framing of them, which doesn't match reality at all. And BRICS gives them the strength to show, you know, that we're part of a global community that is not designed and controlled by the West. And the less control from the West, the better it can be.
I think all of you have, and first of all, let me thank my co-panelists from China for the compliment, and thank you for watching First Post. You've all very, very comprehensively and convincingly argued that the Western media ensures that we see each other through filters that skew our understanding of each other in the Global South and within the BRICS grouping. And that needs to change, and we need to be able to speak for ourselves to each other and convey the message directly, and that's very, very important. Yes, it does not suit the West to talk about our re-emergence because that's not a narrative that suits them. And for years, for decades, they're the ones who've set the narrative. It's important to change that. It'll not happen overnight, but it'll happen with concerted efforts from all sides. So having said that, I also want to bring in here, Peter, the point that while the West is a problem, within the BRICS grouping, there are differences and there are challenges that if we underplay, we run the risk of turning it into yet another talk shop.
Yep.
There are India and China that have just signed a border deal and now things are looking better, but they weren't looking so good in the last four odd years. There is Saudi Arabia and Iran that were until not very long ago sworn enemies, and then there was a coming together and a rapprochement, and yet there are issues that need to be settled. So I think it's important to acknowledge and address the challenges and the differences in security and national interest priorities that each BRICS member brings to the table. If we don't do that, then we, like I said, run the risk of not being able to exploit the full potential of this group that has been built over the years.
Jump in. Go right ahead. That's the point. Go ahead.
I disagree slightly from this point of view. I think the strength of BRICS is it does not bring in the political side, because if you start doing that, then it becomes United Nations, and that hasn't worked out very well. As long as it sticks to trade, it can bring in other countries, countries that will not normally get along, like in South America, in Africa itself, in the Middle East. There is not uniformity there. There are many differences. But if you make it about territory and areas of influence, you will bog it down. If it's just about opening up trade and development, I think there's a chance for success.
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean,
Go ahead. Yes, I just want to say that trade cannot be conducted in a vacuum. Trade is just one dimension of a relationship that a country has with another country or another group. If I could give you the example of Pakistan, which is in the doldrums economically and very keen to restart trade with India. India's position has been very clear that terrorism and trade do not go hand in hand, so we don't want any of it. I think it's important to acknowledge that countries have a multi-dimensional equation with each other, and you cannot take one aspect out and say that this is all that we're going to focus on, irrespective of what you do with us at the border or in a security situation. That is not how
let me go back to you in Beijing. I think the approach is that do what's doable. I mean, it's not a panacea. BRICS is not going to solve all of the world's problems, okay? But what BRICS can do, and I think the hope of the BRICS, is that it can make decisions on its own. You know, for the last 600 years, the world needs the West's permission to do things. BRICS is saying, no, we're weaning ourselves off this. We're going to wean ourselves off the dollar, for example. We're going to trade in our own currencies. That gives you freedom. That gives you sovereignty. Go ahead.
To give you sovereignty and also dignity, you talk about the dominance of U.S. dollars. It is increasingly becoming a tool for the U.S. and specifically the U.S. Treasury Department to really control and manipulate and dominate the rest of the world. And the funny thing is, the irony of it all is, U.S. sanctions oftentimes defeats its purpose. It's not me who said it. It's Barack Obama who said it. It was John Kerry who said it after they retired. You know, if you think about the U.S. sanctions against Cuba, what happened to Cuba? Average monthly salary of Cubans averaging $30 to $50 a year. What happened to Iran after the U.S. sanctions? You know, the Iranian economy contracted in 2018 and 2019 by 8 to 7 to 9% respectively. And to Venezuela, under the U.S. sanctions, you know, that the U.S. sanctions led to a 3,000% of inflation in that very country. And even Barack Obama, I think during his tenure as president, said the U.S. sanctions against Cuba, at least, defeats the purpose. You're pointing to a larger question of whether the rest should succumb to the dominance of the West. I think China has been, and therefore BRICS for that matter, I think, is working consistently to say that, look, the West can be our partner. BRICS is not an exclusive partnership, but an inclusive one. And when it comes to the argument between Arner and my Indian friend regarding the debate between security and development, I think the two things really go hand in hand. That's why, you know, President Xi's Global Development Initiative and Global Security Initiative are concurrently proposed. And I think that's very important because you cannot have peace without the ports, without bridges, without safe drinking water, without gender equality. And also one last thing should I add, we should be focusing more on the sustainable development goals of the United Nations, 17 of them. Antonio Guterres even said, we're failing badly when it comes to the SDGs. BRICS talk about SDGs, BRICS talk about the development. I think we should really move away from the ideological debates and talking to each other through filters. We should be focusing on those developmental issues. Think about the 17 SDGs.
I know, 10 years from now, hopefully BRICS will be having a summit in one of their member countries. What do you hope they'll have succeeded in achieving in the next 10 years?
I think trade and development, some sort of uniform trade agreement that covers them, that reduces tariffs, that allows these countries to do it. I think the biggest opportunity that is out there, if you start looking at small, medium-sized business entities the world over, they are the backbone of all economies. The digital revolution promises or has at least the potential to link these small entities and to unleash the incredible amount of energy that they provide to every single economy that's out there. Imagine a world where you simply fill out a form, and that form is the basis of a contract. It covers who is responsible for what. If neither of you, if A and B don't agree that they want to be responsible, but they want to go ahead, they find somebody else who will take the responsibility. And therefore, you get rid of a lot of lawyers, a lot of accountants. If you have a digital currency, taxation is at the point of transaction. You can then have the bills of it. You don't need bills of lading. You don't need cumbersome contracts and all of this. You can have very smart systems that actually monitor both sides to make sure one can pay and the other one will produce. If you're able to do that among BRICS, I think you'll see a completely changed world, one that is much better for everybody.
Well, and hopefully a lot more peaceful, okay? I'm going to think about, you know, the problem of turning this into a little UN. I think that's something we have to think about as well. But in the meantime, I wish BRICS all of the success and all of us here on the panel. I want to thank our guests in Beijing and in New Delhi. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.